Hey everyone, check out this new film on Amazon Prime called Eight Remains. It's free to all Prime members. Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have some wonderful, wonderful director and a special effect advisor with their new film, Soul Hunters. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. I'm going to screw it up. But I just want everybody to know they're from Mexico City, and I'm excited because they're our first interview from Mexico. Welcome to the show, guys.
All right. Thanks so much for having us. Yeah, so my name is Adrian Acevedo Smith. I am the writer, director, editor of Soul Hunters.
And my name is Arturo Acevedo Smith, and I also co-directed and co-wrote it, and I did all the visual effects on the movie, and I also colored it. So, yeah.
Yes.
See, people, what a wonderful
job.
Look how much work these guys did. They pronounce their own names perfectly. It's awesome. I think that's great. So let's start the film. It's very science fiction-based and very kind of horror-based. Now, is that what you guys were looking for in writing a film?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, we get a lot of different kind of reactions. You know, some people say it's fantasy. Some people say sci-fi. Like
some people say magic.
Yeah, action. So, I mean, I guess we just blended a lot of genres together. We didn't really want to make a film that kind of cookie cutter kind of fit into any typical genre. We just wanted to create. We kind of just wanted to tell a certain story, and then everything just kind of came together.
The most important thing for us was to tell a unique story that we feel had not been told. So it felt like the whole concept of, you know, an ex-mercenary working for a demon and stealing souls was like a really cool thing that we wanted to explore. And then there's where like the story came from.
Now, was a lot of your story based on doing your brothers be able to do special effects for? Because you do use a lot of special effects in this film. You see it in I'd say, every third shot, it's in there.
Yeah, so the fun thing about that is that originally there was going to be really, really few visual effects in the movie. Like, very few stuff was actually going to be in effect. But then as my brother started working on the movie, well, he can tell you.
Yeah, I mean, there were only going to be 30 shots. In the script, there were only 30 VFX shots. And, for example, the soul ripping was just going to be him extracting with the amulet itself. There was going to be no tentacles, no nothing, right? And then as we were seeing the scenes and kind of progressing through the editing, I kind of felt that there were certain things I needed to do to enhance the supernatural aspect of what was going on and to help put the scene together. And so then that's when we ended up adding more and more VFX. It's not like I wanted to, but I felt that every VFX that is in there helps enhance the scene and helps tell the story. And so then it ended up being about 97 shots of VFX instead, which took, you know, about 10 or 11 months to create. But yeah, we kind of, it evolved, you know, the amount of effects. We wrote it more based on how we were going to tell the stories of the characters.
And which was the simplest way to convey the scene. And then eventually it just turned into like, well, wouldn't it be really cool if you could actually see the contract freezing? Wouldn't it be awesome if the amulet would glow? Wouldn't it be great if, you know, claws would come out and rip the soul out? Like, all of that started coming out once we actually had the footage. Yeah.
I gotta say, my favorite VFX shot is the contract disappearing, I guess, crumbling into dust or something.
Yeah.
I love that shot. That's my favorite. I love everything else, but that is my favorite shot, is that. I look forward to that when it happened.
It's a very cool, and we purposely wanted to put the most striking VFX, like, in the beginning, just so you can kind of know what movie you're about to get into, like, 1 minute in. Like, he's killing that guy, I think, a minute and 15 seconds into the movie. So we wanted to, like, get to the point as quick as possible.
So let's discuss. Do you have to do training? I mean, there is a lot of martial arts works you do in this film. So how much training did you have to do for that?
Yeah, so it's fun that you mentioned that. So martial arts is a really big component. For both of us, we grew up watching action movies, classic action movies. And, like, we wanted to make an homage to the action movies of old where the choreography, you could actually see it. And, you know, like martial arts like Jean-Claude Van Damme and people like that, we wanted to make an homage to that. And so then
where you can show the martial arts because the person doing it actually knows what he's doing.
Exactly. We did not want to do Bourne Identity style where you put in an actor that doesn't know what he's doing and then you just use rapid editing and shaky cam to disguise everything. So yeah, in terms of the martial arts training, I mean, I've been doing martial arts, strictly, like actually like going and training and studying them since for about 12 years now. And I have a black belt in Taekwondo, and I'm currently taking Jiu-Jitsu, and I've taken several other martial arts as well. And a star of the film is also a black belt in Taekwondo. And the stunt choreographer we got, she's very talented in karate. And so then we kind of like all combined our talents to be able to do that sort of fight scenes. I mean, yes, Deanna Page, she choreographed everything. I want to make that very clear. But there's just, you know, little influences, little moves here and there that we were able to put into it to make it look as authentic and cool as possible. And then when it came time to the editing, I love editing fight scenes. That's one of the things that just really just makes me so happy, because you're able to just tell a story when you're editing that fight scene that you can also tell, like when two people are talking, it's the same principle, like which is the best angle to show this kick, which is the best sequence, how long do you show this, how often do you cut to it? Like, it's all these interesting things that you can do to be able to make the fight scene entertaining and cohesive and fun to watch.
Yeah, I really like the fight scenes. I think they're a great element to the script. I didn't expect them to look so real, and now you're telling me they were real, which I kind of like.
Every all those moves that you're seeing there, that's like the real deal. Like, we went through a lot of training to be able to perfect that. The actors went and they trained for several weeks, actually, yeah, before we started filming, just to get the fight scenes down. So when we get there, the last thing we want to do is be, like, having them forget the choreography. So they knew that, like, top to bottom, like, instantly. The choreographer would just say, Deanna would say, hey, okay, do the B part from this to this move. Okay, perfect. And then they would do it. And then we'd do it, like, 3 or 4 times, get a different angle, and then move along. Like, the final warehouse battle, we took a whole day to shoot that.
I was thinking
so
that.
We wanted to get that done.
What show?
And bear in mind, we had one camera to shoot everything.
Yeah, and my brother did a tremendous job of being able to, like, light on the fly and being able to make it still look good. You know, because, like, you get to that warehouse and you're, like, you're ready to go. Like, it looks moody and atmospheric, and it looks like a final battle. We just really wanted that feeling that has kind of been lost nowadays, where, like, the final battle is, you know, this giant CG fest with, like, 100 CGI characters, you know, attacking another 100 CGI characters, and you kind of lose the scope. So we wanted to bring it back to, like, one guy versus another guy, because we think that's, like, a really cool 80s staple of action, and we've always loved that.
Fair enough. Now, I think you used a warehouse for more than one location. Am I correct there?
The warehouse was used with the whole ending.
The ending is all in the warehouse. It is actually one warehouse.
But okay. We were going to use it for an application, but actually we didn't end up doing that.
So the first shot...
Yeah, that was going to take place in another scene, but yeah.
Okay, so the parking garage is not the warehouse then?
No, that's actually... That is a parking garage.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure, because it could have been part of, you had an office shot, and I'm like, that could have been part of the warehouse, too. So I was guessing while I'm watching it, if you reuse locations. Because I'm convinced you used the hotel room twice. Am I wrong?
Sorry, you broke up there?
The hotel room, did you use that twice?
No, we just used it for the hotel room, yeah. I mean, there was, like, I think 29 to 32 locations. So, yeah, we were zipping and flying around. We were shooting 2 locations per day. We shot that movie in about 23 days.
Wow.
So it was a very, very busy schedule, very demanding shoot. And, yeah, we were able to do it. But all those locations that you see, the only one we repeated often was Marcus's hideout. But everything else you see, it's pretty much the only time you see it in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the colonel's office, that's the only time you see it in the movie. The warehouse.
There are about as many different actors as... all locations.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good work, guys. You had me convinced that. I'm very impressed. I was like, is it the same place? I'm looking for these things. Let's go back. I want to discuss the old movie theater. I quite like that shot, but smoking in the theater, who let you away with that one?
Oh, yes. Those are fake cigarettes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And And also, that's not an actual, like, movie theater. That's a theater, like, you know, where they do plays and stuff. Okay. So.
How am I going to
Yeah, we just made it look like a movie theater.
Yeah.
So, you guys are starting your film. You're in development. You're using a one camera. We've got 32 locations. So, this is a lot of work. So, let's start the thing. Yeah. How do you do your casting before we go to the locations?
Okay. So, casting was a really fun project for us. We were both the casting directors as well, another hat we wore. So, for that, we put out a casting notice to LA Casting and Now Casting and basically all the casting things. And we used the now defunct Cast Studios.
We had used it before on previous projects.
Yes.
Because we started out on YouTube and we have our respective channels and we have made a lot of videos there. But that's where we discovered this place where you can go and you can go and get casting calls for a bunch of whatever you want, if you want to make a short or anything, and they will come in for free. And then all you have to do is just review them, and that's it.
So we used that facility, and then we put out the casting notice. And, yeah, we saw, I mean, hundreds of actors, and we had so many actresses turn up for the role of Raquel and for Kristen, too. But Raquel, like, there was a huge amount of actresses wanted to be here. And the hardest guy to cast was, by far, was Marcus, because it was a very demanding role, because not only did you have to, like, look tough and be built and act well, you also had to know how to fight. That was a crucial thing. We were like,
you also had to have the look too.
And the look, like the tough guy look, like that we wanted to harken back to. So, yeah, it was a very demanding role. And I think for Marcus, we didn't see that many people, and there weren't that many in the running. But once Zach came in, and we just saw his dedication.
We put it as a requirement that you needed to know martial arts.
Yes.
So that instantly kind of.
Yeah, that filtered a lot of people. Because the thing is, going back to the martial arts thing, I would personally test them right there. Like, I would be like, I said, bring your workout clothes, because at the end of the casting, you're going to do combos with me. So I'd be like, okay, do a left hook followed by a left knee, followed by a right roundhouse, followed by a spinning hook, stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
And so then I would see whether or not they could do those movements and whether or not they could remember the choreography.
It's so, like a full kind of training thing.
Yeah, so then
they come in, they'd act, they do a little fighting, they do it like.
Yeah, I mean, they would obviously stretch beforehand. We wouldn't want anyone getting hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a big part of casting that role. So there was a lot of guys that came in, they're like, oh, he's a good actor. And then as soon as it came to the martial arts, guys like, oh, he can't fight, or vice versa. We had another guy who was really good at martial arts too, but he just couldn't act. So.
And one of the big things we always look for whenever we're casting any of the characters is the enthusiasm of the actor, right? So not only is he good, but will he commit to the project? Because there's a lot of very good actors, but they probably won't have that much enthusiasm for the project.
Exactly.
So when the time comes to shoot it, they're going to be flaky or stuff like that.
Yeah, you don't want a flaky actor. You don't want an actor that's going to be wanting to, like, oh, can I take this day off? Oh, I'm not going to be able to make it.
Especially
can we move
when you're
it?
Not paying him, you know, $50 million.
Exactly, yeah. Or we had a very, very low budget, so we had to keep everything low budget. And we wanted to make sure that the actors fit the part, did their audition well, and were able to take direction. That's another important thing. Like, whenever we run our auditions, even if they, quote-unquote, nail an audition, we immediately ask them to do the complete opposite. Like, complete and total opposite.
Just for fun,
to see if they can take the direction and to see if they can play with the lines. You know? So it's not just, so we know that we're not just getting a person that's just going to read the line that same way, and there's not going to be any, you know, kinetic energy when we're shooting. It's just going to be exactly what you got in the audition.
And then when Zach came in, who's the lead, when he came in, you know, we instantly saw after the audition, not only did he fulfill all the requirements, but he, you know, his enthusiasm was awesome, and he took direction really well, and we knew it was just going to be a blast to work with him.
He had the charisma to carry the role, to be able to carry the movie, because, I mean, he's in virtually every single scene, so he needed someone with a lot of presence to be able to carry that kind of movie. And also with Fonzie, Franziska Schisler, the co-lead, she plays Kristen, it was fantastic to find her, too. Because we saw so many great actresses. But when she came and she read, it was just like, wow, there's just something special about her. And then in the final round of casting, we had already cast Zach. So we had Zach read with a couple of potential Kristens. And yeah, it's just like they immediately connected and the chemistry was there and the chemistry was real. They actually like became good friends.
The range that she had was incredible.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys are awesome. I don't have to say a word. I love it. You guys discussed 32 different locations. Let's discuss a few of them. You can go into more. I don't mind. You have a bar location. You have an apartment location. You have a sorority house location. You have a loft apartment. You have a hotel room. You have 23 Everyone, days. So who organized all this?
Yeah, so
it was sort of, I guess, two people, right? So we had Sean Huntley, who he's the location manager. So he found all the locations, and then Courtney found a couple of other locations.
Courtney Wold, our producer.
Courtney's our producer, also assistant director. She helped find some of the locations as well, and she was the one who kind of organized, along with us, you know, the whole schedule and how we were going to go about doing the company moves and everything. And it was nuts, but that's, you know, we came up with a pretty
good. Yeah, it was complete, and it told them that.
Imagine going, you know, in kind of rush hour, because every time we did the company move, it was around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon in L.A., as you can imagine the traffic. So every time we did a company move, we knew we were going to lose 2 to 3 hours.
Now, the most impressive, crazy location move that we did was the very last day of our shoot. So we had to shoot two scenes. We had to shoot the movie theater, and we had to shoot the ending, which I, you know, won't say what it is. But anyway, the thing is that the first location was, you know, down in South L.A.,
and Long Beach. It was Long
in Long Beach.
Beach,
around Long Beach. And then the other location was in the very northern part. Like, we were going out of L.A. already. So
Santa Clarita,
yeah. So
and
it
this
was,
is coming from Lancaster, where we were living at the time.
Yeah.
So we were living in Lancaster. We drive 60 miles to L.A. Then we drive, like, another 60 miles down to Long Beach. Then we shoot one of the scenes, and then we go, you know, take the two-hour trip all the way up to Santa Clarita and shoot the ocean.
And to make that feasible, we shot the movie theater scene in literally 15 minutes. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not saying, like, oh, my God, it was, like, literally 15. No, like, literally, that was 15 minutes. Because that's all the time we had to be able to pack everything up and get to where we needed to get to film the next scene. So that was, like, really, really good planning, good rehearsal, good. We had all our shots planned out. I think we got two of each, and yeah, we just got what we needed, and we packed our way out of there.
Do you guys find you're so efficient at shooting because you made YouTube videos and you made stuff in the past, so this is not your first rodeo, I guess, the easiest way I can say it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we both went to USC film school, so we both had our share with doing short films and doing things with very low budgets. So we're very much in the style of once we're happy with what we got, we will move on to the next take. And we usually don't spend more than, I would say, our average is 2 to 3 takes per shot. And if it's, like, really not working, then we go to, like, you know, 4 or 5. But
we rehearse a lot with the actors. You rehearse for them a whole month before the shoot.
That is actually a very important part. Yeah, and once we cast them, we basically were rehearsing for them for about a month. So each one of them, we would meet with them individually, and we would go over their scenes. And this is where really, like, a lot of directing really took place, like finding the character, finding those beats, finding your arc, finding all that was off set. So when we got on set, it was just kind of reminding them if they would get lost or finding new ways to do things. But all the foundation was built in those rehearsals where my brother and I would both direct them.
And then when you're finally, you know, shooting the stuff, since I was also the DP, you always have to make sure that you're looking at what the priority is, right? Which is to get the shot or to get the scene out. And a lot of times, you know, especially when we were in the university, there were a lot of people who they would put the priority into some of the more minute things, like is that the right chair or should we do it this way? Like, so a lot of things that, you know.
Tiny, subtle things at the end of the day no one's going to know.
It's just going to cost you less takes for your actor, less time for you to, less stuff for your editor. That stuff that does count at the end of the day, right? That's what you have to kind of focus on, getting the actual scene and getting the actual shot.
I do have a question. Is Rick the Neighbor based on real life person?
Is who? Rick the Neighbor? Yeah, he's... Well, the funny thing, his performance came out so authentic because...
It did. I figured you knew this person.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing is, he worked with me in a couple school projects while I was at USC.
Okay.
So then I called him up and I asked him if he wanted to be in the movie, and he said, of course I will. And so then the night before, we had to change the lines because we changed where that scene took place in the script. So his lines no longer made any sense. So I had to basically rewrite his little speech. So then he was learning it the day of. And then he was really nervous. But then all that nervous energy just played in so well with the performance. And it looked so authentic and real.
Yeah, he was able to channel it really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the name isn't really based on anybody we know. It's more just kind of based on...
We just wanted a really good foil to
like... What if somebody would live next to this guy, right?
Yeah, like this super serious, stoic, morose, you know, it man. They'd be like, oh, hey, man, how's it going? Yeah, you know. We just thought the contrast worked really well, and we wanted to get, like, at least a good little laugh in, since there were things that were pretty serious up until that point.
Oh, so I did laugh. That's why I wrote it down. I had to ask about it.
Thank you. We're glad that you laughed. Yeah, we wanted to be there to like, bring a little levity to the scene so it's not so, you know, dramatic and serious all the time.
Here's something I don't normally talk about, but I would like to for you guys. Costume design in your film. I found nobody was flashy. I found everybody was very, like, nobody stood out. Does that make sense? They all seemed dark and gloomy. Was that an attempt
yes,
for you guys?
Yeah.
Like, nobody was wearing, like, a red or a yellow. Everything was gray or black or dark.
Yes.
It's purposely a very purposeful color combination. Beautiful.
Yes. Our costume designer was Scott Fontaine, and he did an absolutely incredible job on all the costumes. Like, we think that each one of those guys has such a distinct look to them, and we feel like it says a lot about the personality. And yes, you are correct. We didn't want to have any of our characters, like, really pop out because, as undoubtedly noticed, like, the cinematography is very noir, you know, very high contrast, very, like, big shadows and highlights and stuff like that. That's like 70s kind of lighting. So we wanted the costumes to complement that. So we didn't want anyone to have really flashy colors.
Also, we knew that all the locations that we were going to be in, you know, were fairly drab and, you know, like a warehouse or a bunker, all these places, you know, so we didn't want some bright colors, you know, coming out.
Yeah, the only person that has colors, hers are like blue and white. That's Kate. She's the brightest, cheeriest person.
Yes.
Yeah,
everyone else, you are correct, is dressed in very, very dark tones.
I did want to draw attention to my favorite line in the film.
Okay.
You actually ordered room service, broke me up pretty hard.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
That's great. I'm really glad you liked that moment. Yeah. We really wanted, again, like that the contrast to, like, build up that all that anticipation of, like, oh, my God, that's the guy. He's going to get him. He got him. Mission accomplished. And then there comes up Kristen.
Oh, I thought that was great. I thought that was pretty funny because you had it all set up. Like, the movie's been doing a pretty normal thing every time. Like, oh, that's different. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Suddenly that happens.
Yeah.
So, when you guys...
That guy was great, too, because he looked just like what you would expect a hitman to look like.
Yeah, and basically, in the script, we were like a Jason Statham kind of looking guy. Like, we want a tough-looking waiter. So people would still be thinking, oh, that's the guy!
And then what we love, what was kind of improvised, is that he brings up the little trolley. You notice that on top of the food, there's the thing that covers it, right? It kind of slips a little.
Yes.
And then he puts it back. He does it such in character that it makes it even better.
It was such a good character moment that we were like, wow, that guy really,
it sells it.
So have you taken this movie to film festivals or anything, or did you drop it directly on Amazon?
Oh, we've thought about the festival route a lot. But the thing is that we had already contacts with potential distributors, so we prefer to just go to them directly and talk to them and show them the movie directly rather than, you know, going to a film festival and sitting there and, like, maybe they'll see it, maybe they won't. And
yeah, coming from USC, a lot of our colleagues and fellow graduates, you know, a lot of them did do festival routes. And a lot of them told us, you know, you go, you get the pats in the back and everything, you get the watch, but at the end of the day, you get nothing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you rarely actually get a distributor. You rarely actually get any money out of it. And you have to invest a lot of money. You know, a lot of those festivals, $30 to $40 a pop.
Or like 100 and
right?
something. And
plus the travels over there, plus getting the actual screener there. Like all of those costs, they ramp up. And so we figured, well, we'll just take it to the people that we know are sort of distributors. And, you know, at the end of the day, they all said they absolutely love the film and they love the story and the concept and everything. But that these days, if you don't have a name actor, you know, even a remotely name actor.
That was a constant feedback we kept getting. They kept telling us of all the great scenes and the acting and the action and the fight scenes and everything. And then they would always end it with, but you have no name actors. So they would immediately be like, we're sorry, we can't.
Even though there's obviously, you know, there's movies that have been great successes and they had no name actors, but of course the distributors didn't want to take that risk. And so
yeah.
They're like, well, you know.
And when they say name actors, it's not like you need to hire, you know, Robert Downey Jr. They just mean like a guy, like a guest appearance on Friends on the fifth season. That's a name actor.
Yeah, someone that knows. Some of the people will recognize.
Yeah, someone that people will recognize and be like, oh, I remember that guy. That's mainly what they want, and they place a lot of importance on that. Yeah, there's someone that's hearing this podcast that want to take one good tip out of it. It would be that the distributors place so much importance in having at least one name in your movie, like an extraordinary amount of importance. We think it's too much. They kind of
that may change though as time goes by, as there's more and more self-distribution going on. And hopefully more and more people watching those kinds of films. You know, the power that these distributors have is probably going to start dwindling away very slowly. And, you know, eventually that kind of a huge, like, well, you can only distribute this if you have a star is probably going to disappear.
We're hoping. Yeah, so then that's why we decided to go the route of self-distribution. And we also wanted to pick now. Because now is a really great like space to take out your indie movie where people actually are going to be watching and talking about it.
Well, yeah, like
because as soon as
two,
March,
2 weeks to go though.
Yeah, 2-3 weeks ago. Because
now it's too late. Cause,
yeah,
because Marvel's starting to machine.
Exactly. Like once March hits, that's it. Like that's your because I mean I'm sure you've noticed this. The summer blockbusters start in March every year. They don't no longer wait until April or May or June. They start in March. I mean, Batman vs Superman came out in March. Deadpool came out in February. Like, they start very, very, very early now. And Captain Marvel is literally coming out in March 6th, 8th, something like that.
Yeah,
so
it's October,
and then they creep
out December as
yeah,
well.
Because before October was also kind of a free month, but now you got stuff like Venom creeping in there. And, like, or August and September used to be a good dumping ground, but now you've got more summer movies that didn't make the cut going in there. So it's really difficult, and we were like, well, you can either release it, like, in January or February or, like, later on in the year, or like, maybe in October. But, yeah, we were like, okay, let's just get it out. We finished it. Yeah.
Okay. Two more questions because I don't want to not have time for fun questions. Is there a part two
sure.
coming?
Is there a what?
Part two.
Oh, I mean, you know.
There's many parts. We
obviously envisioned it as like a bigger story, part of a bigger story to tell, and we do leave it on a note where another one could potentially happen. Like we close the story up, but we wanted to leave it open in case a sequel could happen, and we do have several ideas. Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah, we're just hoping that basically this will serve as sort of a springboard.
So
we can come back with a sequel, you know, with a higher budget and kind of tell another more expansive story.
Yeah.
Okay. Before I forget, I have to ask you about catering. I'd get in trouble with everybody else if I make them answer this question. How was catering?
Catering was good. I mean, Courtney and Angelique. Yes. Courtney and Angelique handled all the catering needs. Angelique was our production coordinator. She did a fantastic job. The actors were very well fed. We had Crafty in every single location. We had to hide that Crafty table in almost every single shot.
So if you're planning on having Crafty on set, you know, one, your actors are always going to be eating it, and your crew as well. And then Two, if you're going to plan for a half hour of lunch, don't, because it's always going to be
an hour.
Always turns to an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my brother and I,
we would eat in like roughly 10 to 15 minutes and then immediately start.
Well, the cool thing is that since we were running the project,
yeah.
I could go back to work whenever I wanted to.
Exactly. And since he's literally the cinematographer and I was there being the director and
slash
editor.
I just eat like 10 minutes and then just go straight back.
Yeah, we would go and like, you know, get everything ready for the next couple shots. And then, you know, once people came back in from eating, you know, we were ready to go.
But yeah, definitely block out an hour.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what they're
going to
think. Yeah.
Okay. That's everything for me, but I'm going to ask you about fun questions. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. I've only made three questions. One, it's the same question for each of you to make your lives easier. Your favorite action film?
Favorite action film?
Yes.
Oh, you can say yours.
Oh, my God. I left Broken Sword.
You're the only brother.
I'm Broken Sword. It's just that you don't understand. Our action is like our reason to live. Like, it's we have so many favorites that, I mean, you know what? Like, if we're talking about action, just like the very large spectrum of action, it has to be Jurassic Park. That's the movie that inspired me to be a director, to make action movies, to make entertainment. That's the movie that inspired me. And if it's about like martial arts action, I'll have to go with a tie, and it's either The Matrix Reloaded or Blade, because those two movies are the ones that inspired me to do that sort of genre. With The Matrix Reloaded, like, I had never seen a 7-minute fight sequence in a Hollywood movie like that, and I was like, oh my God, I need to do something like that one day. And with Blade, it was just something so cool and so original and so different, and the style and the world that they created, like, those two movies I feel like really are a big inspiration and are obviously like one of my favorites.
Yeah, I would say the Matrix trilogy, probably all three of those are probably what were the biggest influences on us. You know, every single one of those movies has some kind of action set piece that ended up influencing one or other of the videos that we made or that I made. So yeah, definitely the Matrix films.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your favorite martial arts move?
Favorite martial arts move? For me, it's the jumping spin back kick. So the jumping spin back kick, it's the very last kick that Marcus executes on Eli.
Perfectly.
And it's the same kick that I do on my short film, Celestate vs. Sam Fisher, which my brother also shot. That was a project that kind of led to this, actually. And I just really like the athleticism of it and how cool it looks on film. Like, because it looks like he's taking a long jump, and then there's a spin in the air, and then it turns into a kick that's very easy to register. So that's why it's my favorite martial arts move.
I'll say, I mean, you can't be with the name, but I think it's the 540 spin.
The 540 spin kick, yeah.
Yeah.
The 540, it's kind of like a tornado kick, but you add in an extra spin, so it looks really, like, hyper incredible. My brother used one of those kicks in his short film, Takedown.
Yeah, the one I did in USC, and then I shot it at 60 frames so I could slow it down, right? And then we did the same thing for the movie. So
yeah, exactly.
The one movie you should have seen, but you never have.
One movie we should have seen, but we
I mean, there's so many still.
I mean, we've seen all the legendary movies that we should have seen. Like, we saw Dirty Harry, The French Connection, Jaws, like all the movies from the 70s.
Right now I'm finishing watching Scarface.
I have not seen Scarface.
Can I throw one out there?
I have not seen.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, sure.
Seven Ups.
Is he writing them?
Seven Ups?
Like, Seven Ups. Roy Scheider's 70s cop film.
I will write it down.
And I also want to ask you guys, have you guys ever seen the Raid films?
Oh, have we seen? Yeah, that's like another huge, like, oh my God, look at this. It's another one of those movies kind of revolutionized the action genre. Like what John Wick did, right, when it brought in guns in martial arts, the Raid did in terms of like showing martial arts sequences again.
Well, Raid, what the Raid demonstrates is that a movie can make money and be a success.
With no name actors. I didn't know who that was.
And
it's just the fights. People go to see them.
And in a foreign language, which I think is also noteworthy. But yeah, movies like that, I feel like the top tier of martial arts movies are like The Raid, The Protector with Tony Jaa, and Undisputed 2 with Scott Adkins. Like those are some of the most talented martial artists we've ever seen since Bruce Lee.
They choreographed those fight scenes for The Raid, for example. They took them like 6 or 7 months.
For sure. 100%. Those things are amazing.
And it shows, you know.
It does.
Yeah.
So before you guys go, before I forget, tell everybody where they can find your film.
Absolutely, yeah. So we are available on Amazon. So all you have to type in is Soul Hunters, and it should pop up. If not, you can type in Soul Hunters Smith.
Or Soul Hunters Movie.
Or Soul Hunters Movie. And we also have our website, which is soulhuntersmovie.com. And in it, you can also see a link to see the movie.
Everything is Soul Hunters Movie. You type in Soul Hunters Movie, you find the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, everything.
Yeah, the Facebook, the Instagram, the movie website. It's all Soul Hunters Movie. The only one that's different is the Twitter, which is Soul Hunters Film. But everything else is Soul Hunters Movie.
And if you are, you know, somewhere else other than the States, and for some reason you can't see, although it should be able to be viewed on Amazon all over, soulhuntersmovie.com, we have another sort of streaming service that works internationally. So there's a version in English and a subtitle version for people who just speak Spanish.
And if you want to just see our everyday content too, we both have our respective YouTube channels. Mine is Godzilla Rex, and in it deals with martial arts and movies and superheroes. And my brother's is Spidey 406.
Yeah, I created it when I was very young.
Yes.
But it's called Spidey 406, and it's a bunch of stop motion animations and a bunch of computer animations.
Yes.
Well, thank you for your time. You guys were awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for having us. We had a blast.
And good luck with your film. Have a great night. Yeah, bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.